T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Ladies and gentlemen, Democratic candidate for President of the United States, Senator Cory Booker.
Hello! Hello! I am so happy to be here! So happy to be here! All right, y'all, settle down. They got me on the clock. Because they know a black man up here talking, it might just, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm in church. And you know when the pastor says, I just got a little bit more, and they go on for like 45 minutes longer. Look, when I come to African-American gatherings, I always feel like it's a family reunion because so many of us have been in this movement for so long. And whether it's NAACP convention, Urban League convention, Rainbow Push, National Action Network, I am so happy that we have a leader in Tom Perez who understands that bringing black folks together is just not important for adornment. It's critical if we're going to win elections nationally. And what I want to do is I want to talk like we are family. I don't want to get right to the issues. Because I was raised by a family. My parents literally in 1969, 50 years ago this month, had to get a white couple to pose as them to buy the house that I grew up in. And after they were denied housing, the white couple put a bid on the house. The bid was accepted. And on the day of the closing, the white couple didn't show up. My father did, and a lawyer. And you would think this would be over, but it wasn't, because they walk in and the real estate agent is so upset that he'd been caught in this sting operation that he gets up and punches my dad's lawyer in the face and sigs a dog on my dad. And as I was growing up in this home, every time my dad would tell this story, the dog would get bigger. My dad was eventually like, boy, I had to fight a pack of wolves to get you in this house. And so I grew up around a kitchen table where my parents talked about the racism and the bigotry that we had to overcome. And they always talked about how we did it by creating powerful coalitions of people, black folks, white folks, Christians, Jews, and more, helping us to overcome. And my parents taught me that I stood on the shoulders of these giants, that I owed a debt that I couldn't pay back, but I had to pay forward. That's why when I finished with all my education, my dad was not satisfied. Stanford, Oxford, Yale, Rhodes Scholar, my dad's like, boy, you got more degrees in the month of July, but you ain't hot. Life is not about the degrees you get, it's about the service you give. And so I moved into the neighborhood I still live in right now, inner city Newark, New Jersey. I am proud of a community where we do not mistake wealth with worth. I'm the only senator that lives in a community below the poverty line. But I'll tell you what, the first thing I did was start working as a housing organizer because people fought for my housing rights. I had to pay it forward. We have turned things around in Newark. Our school system now, the number one ranked school system in America for beat the odds schools, high poverty, high performance. A community 60 years of decline, now expanding. A neighborhood where we reformed our court systems, prisoner reentry programs. We had supermarkets and food deserts, black entrepreneurialism, access to capital. All of these issues we fought for by creating uncommon coalitions to create uncommon results, raising the consciousness of the country about our community, what was possible. And that's why I worry right now in this election that we're making it all about getting rid of one guy from one office. I am not interested in running for president because of what I'm against. I'm running for president because what I am for. We have got to be a nation where we articulate what our vision's for. And as a guy who's a mayor of a majority African-American city, we've got to tell the truth. Because if this is just about getting rid of Donald Trump, I want you to know in my neighborhood, before Donald Trump was elected, we had serious challenges. Children drinking in some of our schools from plastic bottles, because we have in this nation 3,000 jurisdictions where children have more than twice the blood lead level of Flint, Michigan. We have in this nation, in my neighborhood, shootings on, unfortunately, too regular of a basis. And we know that black men are 6% of the nation's population, but they make up the majority of the homicide victims. We have in my country incredible entrepreneurs, but we had to fight just to get them to access to capital because we still live in a nation where black and brown people who want to open businesses do not get the access to capital that they should get. In my community, we see healthcare disparities. In my community, we see too many people who work full-time jobs but still need food stamps at our local bodega. And so I am fighting in this election to get us focused on the common call of our country, which is more than just about one person. And I'm calling us together not to even take on the tactics of the person we're trying to beat. Let me be clear, I walked into an Iowa town hall, big guy sees me, former tight end for Stanford University, former All-American football player. The older I get, the better I was. He puts his arm around me and says, I want you to punch Donald Trump in the face. And I stop in my tracks and I look at him and I said, dude, that's a felony. We are not going to win this election by fighting him on his turf and his terms. We are not going to win this election by showing the worst of who we are. This has got to be a movement election, and how we beat demagogues and how we beat bigotry and racism before, because every generation has had it. The gardens of our democracy have never been free of the weeds of bigotry and hate. But the way we beat them was by calling to the conscience of a nation, by activating people to get engaged and understand that the opposite of justice is not injustice, it's apathy, it's indifference. We beat Bull Connor not by bringing bigger dogs and more powerful fire hoses, but by activating and organizing through creative artists of the movement who called upon the consciousness of a country to get off their couches and join them in the struggle. And so I'm here about the struggle. This has got to be a movement election, because what I see, particularly for African-American communities, is unacceptable. This assault on women's reproductive rights is an assault on women, but it's a particularly assault on African-American women. And the Hyde Amendment to deny people through Medicaid and Medicare abortion rights, that is an assault on African-American women too. I am president of the United States. I'm going to create in the White House an Office of Reproductive Rights so we can make sure we don't just fight for access to contraceptive care and abortion, but we fight to make sure we end the tragedy that America leads industrial nations in maternal mortality. And maternal mortality rates for black women are 4 times higher than white women. When I am president of the United States, we will end mass incarceration as we know it. Because we have a nation where there are more blacks under criminal supervision than all the slaves in 1850. When I'm president of the United States, we are going to have a small business bill of rights to make sure that every single person who has entrepreneurial instincts, especially women, especially black and brown women, make sure that they have equal access to capital. When I am president of the United States, we are going to make sure that we take on the corporate gun lobby with a fight like they have never seen before. When I am president of the United States, health care will be a right for all American citizens. And we will make sure that public schools do not have to sustain attacks where we devalue teachers. But we will stand up to make sure we raise teacher salary. We will stand up and make sure that we end the school-to-prison pipeline. We will make sure that we create cathedrals of learning. I'm going to go all around this nation and let folks know not what I'm against, but what I'm for. Not trying to divide people, but unite people in the cause of justice. Not try to put some folks down, but lift all Americans up. Because what's at stake right now is what our ancestors fought for. If you go today to Memphis, Tennessee, right where King was slain, you'll see words of scripture there. The first time I read them, I got chills, because I knew why they wrote them, not about religion or pie in the sky when you die. They wrote them as a call to our generation, the generation now that has seen the racial wealth gap expand and not close. The generation right now where young black boys have more of a chance of going to prison in some communities in college. It was a challenge to us. And what does it say right there? It says the words of Joseph's brothers who called out when they saw Joseph coming and grabbed him and tried to kill him by throwing him into a well, throwing him into a pit. Well, there's so many Americans right now struggling and feeling like they're in the pit. And so they wrote the words of Joseph's brothers right where King was slain as a message to our generation. And what does it say there? It says, "Behold, here cometh the dreamer. Let us slay him and see what becomes of his dream." What will become of our dream? The dream of our parents and grandparents and ancestors. What will become of the American dream? That even today we remember those that died on beaches of Normandy for the dream. We remember Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner who died together in Mississippi for the dream. What will become of the dream? Well, I say it's our generation's turn to dream again. Bold dreams and defiant dreams and dreams of love and unity. It's time for us to dream again of being a nation where everyone has access to health care, where our schools are cathedrals of learning. It is time for us to dream again. And if this election can become not about one guy and one office, that's the floor is beating him. But it's time for us to go to the mountaintop again. If we can make this a movement election that activates the consciousness of a country, that brings out everybody from the sidelines of a democracy to getting on the field, joining together in unison, in collective voice, and say, "I too dream of America." If we do like that, then we won't just win an election. We will change neighborhoods from coast to coast. Communities like mine will see a nation where justice does roll down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream. Thank you, everybody.
And Indiana mayor and Democratic candidate for President of the United States, Pete Buttigieg.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you so much. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for that welcome. Thank you. I thought today would be as good a day as any to prove that I do in fact own a suit jacket. I just only bring it out for special occasions. Thanks so much to the DNC leadership, to the caucus for having us today. I have to admit I'm having some flashbacks right now because a couple of years ago we were here for another purpose. The elections that led to the DNC nominating its fantastic chair, Tom Perez, and I thank him for his leadership. I thank him for beating me because I wouldn't be where I am if I were in the role that I sought at the DNC, but I believe passionately, now as I did then, in the importance of the work before the Democratic Party. And I know that the work that you are doing is central to our ability to deliver on our message. Just before coming over to this venue, I had the very moving experience of visiting the crypt where Dr. King and Coretta Scott King are interred. And it made me think about a new monument we have in South Bend that we put in a couple of years ago. It's a life-size statue of Dr. King, arm in arm with Father Ted Hesburgh, who was the president of the University of Notre Dame. And they were at Soldier Field, locked arm in arm, joining a protest in the early 1960s, time when Dr. King was younger than I am now in Chicago. And right now, it is justifiably one of the images of which the university is proudest. It's based on a photograph of that moment. But the thing that I always think about when I look at that statue and when I look at that photograph is that it was actually not considered a wise move on Father Ted's part at the time to go join Dr. King. I'm not even sure the university was proud of it at the time because it was considered activism. It was considered political. I think it's a reminder that what is moral is inevitably political. And what is right is not always popular. But through the work that goes on in the party and across the country, we make sure to do what is right regardless and make sure that it become popular. Now, this is not how I imagined that I would be spending my 37th year on this earth, or my 8th year as mayor of South Bend. But I'm running for president because I believe we too are living in a moment of exceptional seriousness, that even now, believe it or not, we may be underreacting to the moment upon us, that we are lucky and unlucky enough to be living at one of those blank pages between chapters in the American story. And that means that the choices that we as a party make in the next 3 or 4 years are going to decide what life will be like in this country for the next 30 or 40. And I think a moment like that calls for a new kind of message and a new kind of messenger. And I believe there's no going back. My hometown, South Bend, is a city that changed its future, changed its trajectory. And I believe the comeback of our city stands as living proof that there is no such thing as an honest politics that revolves around the word again. That we in our party can no more deliver a return to the 2000s or the 1990s than our conservative counterparts can or should deliver a return to the 1950s. It is time for something completely different. And in the spirit of something completely different, I'd argue this might be a good moment for us to see more local leaders at our national highest level of politics, perhaps even the occasional mayor running for president of the United States. Why not? Why not a mayor at a moment when people wish Washington would begin to look a little more like our best-run cities and towns before it starts going the other way around? Why not a voice from the industrial Midwest at a time when the message is being sent to our forgotten communities that the only pathway to greatness is nostalgia or resentment? And yes, why not somebody from a newer generation? Generation that will be on the business end of climate change for as long as we live. Generation that stands to be the first in American history to earn less than our parents unless something is done to change that trajectory. I believe it is time for a new generation of American leadership at every level, including all the way up to the White House. I also think that in order to win the White House, we're going to need a new vocabulary, not new values. Democratic values are the right values, and the chaos of this moment has only served to vindicate what we have believed in all along. But it might be time for a new vocabulary, an answer to that idea that Democrats can't put what we believe onto a bumper sticker, by talking about our core values, like freedom, security, and democracy. Now, freedom, security, and democracy mean a lot to all Americans. But in particular, we need to face the fact that freedom, security, and democracy have been more available to some than to others, not just as a matter of American history, but as a present-day reality. And the racial inequality in our economy and in our government is the prime example of what we need to get right before it's too late. It will not be enough to replace racist systems and racist policies with neutral policies. If we are not actively, proactively, yes, affirmatively, reversing these harms, then my generation too will be held to account for our failure to correct the system. And so whenever I hear from the right grumbling about identity politics, I think first of all about what is happening in this White House, which I would describe as peak white identity politics, designed to drive us all apart. I believe that we can honor our identities and one another, and yet also use them as a basis to form common cause with those not like us. Because I am a man, it is twice as important that I be standing with women whose reproductive freedoms are at risk today. Because I was born here and have the paperwork to show it, it is twice as important that I stand up for Dreamers who are just as American as I am, but don't have the documentation. And yes, because I am white, it is twice as important that I stand up to inequality that is visited upon the heads of Black Americans in our country today. And so that will be part of how we talk about our values, freedom, security, and democracy, and what they mean today. We have got to break the conservative monopoly on the language of freedom. They get a certain kind of freedom, you know, freedom from government, freedom from taxes. What about freedom to live a life of your choosing? Isn't healthcare freedom? At a time when you might not be able to start a small business if leaving your old job means losing your healthcare? Is reproductive freedom not freedom? We're going to talk about freedom in a different way. And yes, when young Black mothers are three times as likely to die in childbirth as white mothers, when diabetes and prostate cancer are more likely to go undiagnosed and to harm people in the Black community, we know that freedom is being impaired because of racism in this country, not just directly, but through our healthcare system. I believe education is part of the basis for freedom in this country, which is why I think it's time for a Secretary of Education who believes in public education. I also believe we have to attend to the fact that everyone is worse off when a racial achievement gap persists in our society and in our communities. And that's why when we talk about teacher pay, I want us to start by directing federal support for teachers to the schools that have been most underinvested in this country, most of which are minority-majority. It means that we support HBCUs in this country with dedicated funding because we know what they are doing to lift up a Black middle class. Economic opportunity is freedom. That's why in South Bend we're investing in resources for diversely owned businesses on the west side of our city. That's why we've launched disparity studies to help us get the legal basis to set goals as a city for who we do business with. And it means we're going to have to talk about issues in our economy that don't get talked about much. Not only for those who are kept in grinding poverty, but for those who are working their way into the middle class and those who have done very well professionally. It's why we need to name things like the Black tax, the phenomenon that many professionals find themselves supporting others who are dependent on them in their social networks and in their families. And even though I am a progressive, this is one tax that I would like to do away with. And let's talk about the fact that clean water is freedom. Now, every mayor thinks a lot about wastewater and water. If we can get clean, safe drinking water to Afghanistan, we can get clean, safe drinking water to places like Flint, Michigan. So let's not let them say that freedom is property of the Republican Party. And the same with security. Because when I went overseas with a uniform and a flag on my shoulder, that flag was not a Democratic or Republican flag, it was an American flag. It did not belong to one side of the aisle. And if it stood for anything, it stood for the freedom to exercise peaceful protest and political speech in this country with nobody questioning your loyalty to the republic for which it stands. But that means talking about security in its richest sense, security that cannot be delivered by putting up a wall from sea to shining sea. What about cybersecurity? A wall's not going to help with that. What about election security? When your vote, not your gun, is the thing that sees to it that your government works for you and not the other way around. Election security matters, cybersecurity matters, climate security matters because climate disruption is a security issue in the 21st century. And we are not secure if the Second Amendment is taken to mean that we have to accept a death sentence for thousands of Americans every year. In this country, and I say this as somebody who has consoled the parents of murdered teenagers, as somebody who has been there to swear in officers with their families at their side and does not want to see them outgunned, as somebody who trained on weapons of war, I can tell you that there are weapons that do not ever belong on the streets of an American neighborhood in peacetime. And yes, when we think about security, we have to think about the fact that the criminal justice system in this country makes us less and not more safe. You don't enjoy security in a country that is incarcerated at a higher rate than anywhere else in the developed world. That is why we need to break and reverse mass incarceration in this nation. It's why we should end incarceration as a punishment for drug possession. It's why we should end private prisons in this country. It makes us no safer as a country when people who are leaving incarceration have been excluded from Medicaid. It worsens the public health of the entire nation. And I would argue that anyone in this country is less secure if we live in a country that can practice torture on its own citizens, and prolonged solitary confinement is torture, which is why it must be brought to an end. So we're not going to let them say that freedom belongs to a political party or that security belongs to a political party. And we're certainly not going to allow them to go on saying that God belongs to a political party. Not when the teachings of faith instruct us to comfort the prisoner, to welcome the stranger, to take care of the poor, to lift up the downtrodden, to find the marginalized in our communities and in our society, and to stand up for them even if it is not safe, even if it is not popular. At a time when we are counseled to seek in our leaders the qualities of decency and forbearance and kindness and humility, do not let the party now in charge in Washington tell us that they have a monopoly on faith. It's just not right. So it's a good thing that we have a plan to win. There's just a small matter of making sure that the game is fair and square. And that's why we need to attend to our democracy above all. On a day when we commemorate the people who gave their lives in Normandy in order to secure our democracy abroad, by the way, many of whom were black and came home to a country where they could not exercise their democratic rights right here, let us take account of the sad fact that you cannot take it for granted that our country becomes more democratic with each generation. Sometimes we have been led to believe that is true, but it is not. We are a three steps forward, two steps back kind of country when it comes to democracy, going all the way back to Reconstruction. And we've seen it right now. I don't need to tell Georgia about this. Stacey Abrams ought to be the governor of Georgia. When racially motivated voter suppression is permitted, when districts are drawn so that politicians get to choose their vote instead of their voters instead of the other way around, when money is allowed to outvote people in this country, we cannot truly say that we live in a democracy. And it is time for us to stand up for democracy, not just because our party tends to do better when more people are allowed to vote, but because every American will be better off when our democracy lives up a little more to its ideals. It's why we need to expand automatic voter registration. It's why Election Day ought to be a holiday. It's why we ought to expand early voting and vote by mail. And yes, I would argue that it is appropriate in a country that thinks of itself as a democracy, that the way we would choose the leader of this nation would be to count up all the votes and give it to the woman or man who got the most. That doesn't seem like too much to ask. But we don't get the luxury of having a fair playing field yet. We're going to create one when we win. But first, we got to win. And I, even in this bleak and challenging and confusing time, am hopeful about the road ahead. First of all, I'm hopeful because I come to Georgia and see it on the cusp of becoming a blue state. I am hopeful because I saw in 2018 what was possible in the way that we took back the House, not by running away from our record, but by running on our record, because our record was one of delivering for Americans. And I'm hopeful because of my own story. As somebody who joined the military at the beginning of this decade, knowing that it was the policy of that same military to kick me out if I were honest about who I was, and now standing before you, married to my husband, a top-tier candidate for President of the United States. If American troops could storm the beaches in the name of freedom and democracy overseas, then American voters, American candidates, American activists can win the day for freedom and democracy here at home. But we have to have the courage of our convictions. We have to have a smile on our face and a fire in our belly. We cannot take no for an answer when we are standing up for what is right. And we have to make sure that as strongly as we feel about the things we are against, we never allow anybody to be confused about what it is we are for. We are for freedom. We are for security. We are for democracy. We are for freedom in faith. We are for family values that serve all families. And above all, we are for each other. It's what it means to be a Democrat. So I'm proud to have that letter D next to my name. And I'm proud to be associated with you and your work. And I promise to be there for you, at your side, every step of the way, through 2020 and beyond. And I cannot wait to see what we can do in my lifetime to make this a more perfect union. Thank you, and I will see you on the trail.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.